Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Consumer Review Report. I'm Diane Rebecca here on Tube City Online, WMCK.FM Internet Radio. This is the Consumer Review Report. We deal with consumer issues if you are a first-time listener. And it is heard here on Sunday at 4 p.m. and Thursday at 9 a.m. Podcasts of these shows are available on WMCK.FM/CRR, iTunes, Google, iHeart, Spotify, and Spreaker. Now, if you have any ideas of any products or services you would like to hear on the show, you can email me at consumerreviewreport@gmail.com. I'm also on Facebook at Consumer Review Report and on Twitter at CRR in McKeesport. Also, if you have any questions or comments about anything you've heard on the show, you can also email me at consumerreviewreport@gmail.com. I'm also on Facebook at Consumer Review Report and on Twitter, and that would be CRR in McKeesport. All right. So, today's show, we're going to touch on scams again because there's a lot of new scams to watch out for in 2021. So, we have audio from a video from the Deal Guy entitled 10 Scams You Should Not Fall For in 2021. And then, of course, our friend who we've aired here before, Theo Joe, has a new video out called New Scams to Watch Out For in 2021. So we'll be listening to that. And we will also go over a love scam since it is Valentine's Day. We'll go over a love scam that was posted on the Federal Trade Commission's website. So we'll see what they have to say about that. And then later in the show, we will be talking cars with Consumer Report. That's right. We have a audio from a video posted on YouTube. All these tube words that I got going on here. One of the subject matters is the 2021 Hyundai Elantra First Impressions. And then another subject they'll cover is why a fender bender can be so expensive. So we'll go over that later in the show. In the meantime, let's touch upon these scams because I don't think anybody is learning from hearing about new scams or anything like that. So we have to keep on educating people so less and less people fall for the scams and put these scammers out of business. All right. So the first audio we're going to hear from again is from 10 Scams You Should Not Fall For. No, actually, we're going to do Theo Joe's sound first. New scams to watch out for in 2021. So let's take a listen.
It's 2021, and just like every previous year, it seems like scammers are just becoming even more prevalent. So I'm going to go over in this video a bunch of different scams that are either brand new that I really have never heard of, or that are becoming at least more prevalent, even if they're not exactly new, so you still need to be on the watch for them this year. So starting off, we have the so-called car wrap scam, and in this one, you'll either see some kind of job posting or maybe even get an email or see an advertisement for something that claims to be able to pay you to just drive your car around. And the idea is that you'll answer this ad and they'll say, yeah, all you have to do is put an advertisement car wrap logo on your car, drive it around like you normally would, and we'll pay you several hundred dollars a week for that. If you accept this, they'll usually send you a check that is a bogus check for a few thousand dollars. It will initially cash in the bank before they realize it's fraudulent, but in the meantime, they will tell you, oh, use this money and go to our supplier who's a specialist in car wraps and just give him the money and pay him and he'll handle it. And they'll tell you to do this in some way that's not really reversible, like a wire transfer or a money order, something like that. At some point, probably not too long after you make this payment to this so-called specialist who just is part of the scam, then the bank will realize that the check is fraudulent after a couple days, and then they'll deduct that money out of your account because it never should have been deposited. So then you're out both the money that was deposited from the check and whatever money you have sent to the scammer. So you lost it all. So again, this is just another variation of the fake check scam, always be wary of any company that says, we're going to send you a check and you go and use that to buy something. That's kind of sketchy. All right, next up, we have the so-called family emergency scams. You may have heard of these. These have been around for a while, but apparently they're becoming a lot more prevalent. With this one, you'll get a phone call claiming to be a relative of yours, and they're in some kind of emergency that requires you to give them money. This is often like they're out of town on vacation, and they just got arrested. They need money for bail, for example, is a common one. This scam frequently targets older people, and then they'll pretend to be grandkids, and they'll say, oh, grandpa, grandma, I'm in jail. I need a bail, whatever. And then they'll also say something like, please don't tell mom and dad. They'll be so mad. Please just send the money over now and I'll sort it out and then tell them. And the idea is to get them to send the money before confirming this story with anyone to find out if this person is even out of town at all. So they try to get you to urgently send the money for whatever reason. It's always very urgent. They need the money now. Maybe the hearing is tomorrow and they need the money for a lawyer, or they need to get out of jail now because, I don't know, there's scary people in jail, that sort of thing. And these scammers are more clever than you may think. I saw one post where someone questioned why they sound different. They're like, you don't sound like my grandson. And they said, oh, well, I broke my nose while being arrested, and that's the reason I sound different. So needless to say, if you ever receive a phone call from anyone, even someone you know, claiming to need money right away and you need to wire the money or something else like that, it's best to, first of all, not answer any phone call from a number you don't recognize, but at least verify the story somehow and know that this is a scam going around. So if you do get a phone call from someone needing bail, it probably is a scam. All right, moving on. The next scam is fake phone calls from people claiming to be Apple or Amazon support. This is basically a variation of the fake order confirmation scams you may have heard of in the past. Usually this, up until now, they would have been an email. They send you a fake order confirmation and they say to cancel this order, go in here, and it's a phishing thing. Well, this is different. They actually call you up on the phone and do a robocall, and they may say something like, this is Amazon support and this is alerting you to an unauthorized purchase of an iPhone for $1,000. Press 1 to talk to customer service to cancel this. And of course, if you pick up and you're like, oh, I didn't order that, you press 1, you talk to a scammer, and then they'll usually ask for your credentials. They'll try to get your bank account number to say, oh, to cancel this, we need your original credit card info, anything like that. But just know that it's a scam. And actually, the FTC does have a couple sample audio clips. I'll play one right now to kind of get an idea of what this might sound like.
An unauthorized purchase of an iPhone XR 64 gigabytes for $749 is being ordered from your Amazon account. To cancel your order, or to connect with one of our customer support representatives, please press 1 or simply stay on the line.
So that's just one example for Amazon, but apparently Apple is another one that scammers are using. They'll call you up again with some kind of robocall and say something like, there's unauthorized access to your iCloud account. Again, press 1 or talk to customer service or call this number to access customer service. And then you go and you connect to a scammer. So if you get one of these phone calls, never call the number that they tell you. Just if you're really unsure about it, then go on Amazon or Apple's official website and contact them through the official number listed on the website, not some number that a phone call gives you, because it could be fake. As a side note, if you ever get a robocall from this type of scam or any other, never press any numbers on the phone. Just hang up right away, because if they hear you press the number, then they know now that it's a live working number, and then that may be added to a list and you'll start getting even more and more spam calls. So it's best to just not answer if you don't recognize it, and just hang up immediately when you realize it's a scam. All right, now the next type of scam is the overpaid utility bill scam. And with this one, you'll get some kind of phone call, usually a robocall, maybe a voicemail, that'll say, hey, you overpaid your latest electricity bill or whatever, and you're eligible for a cash refund. All you have to do is press 1 or call this number to talk to customer service. It might not be a cash refund. They might say, oh, well, confirm it and we'll apply a discount to your next bill, something like that. Of course, when you press 1 or connect to this customer service who's actually the scammer, then they'll usually require some kind of confirmation for the payment in the form of your bank account number, where to deposit. We need to know where to deposit the money, or something like that. Your personal information that they'll use to steal your identity, any type of thing they'll be able to collect from you. And even in the best case scenario, where it's not an outright thief trying to steal your money away, at the best case scenario, it's like a really sketchy marketing company trying to get you to switch to their crap utility company, and they're basically still lying. So you don't want to even interact with them. They're still using sketchy, lying marketing tactics. So it's either a scam or someone you don't want to deal with anyway. All right, moving on, I think we're on to number 5. We have the so-called package waiting scam. And what's new about this is they've been actually sending out text messages where previously it's a variation of kind of like a fake order confirmation email you receive, like I mentioned before. But now you may start getting text messages and they may even know your first name or something from data brokers and that sort of thing. And they'll say, oh, you have a package waiting from USPS or from Amazon. Click this link to find out more and how to receive it, that sort of thing. But then if you do click the link, it's going to take you to what looks like a login page for probably Amazon or whatever website they're saying they're from. But of course, it's a phishing page and they're going to immediately steal your credentials and then use it to order from your real account and then take your money that way. But again, if you receive one of these, never click the link. Even if you know it's a scam, you're curious what the website's going to look like, don't do it, because they definitely have trackers on those links to know who is clicking the links and who's not, and then you're going to start to get even more text message spam because they know you're a working number. So just don't even do it. All right, next up, we have really a whole category of scams, which are known as income scams generally. And these have become so much more prevalent in the past year that even the FTC has started a new campaign to spread awareness called Operation Income Illusion to let people know that these scams are becoming more common. These scams come in all sorts of shapes and sizes. Actually, that car wrap scam we talked about in the beginning was basically a form of this. But usually you'll see some kind of job posting or maybe an advertisement on social media. You may even get an email, and basically it'll claim, oh, work from home and you'll make all sorts of lots of money in a short amount of time. And it'll basically be something that's just too good to be true. And regardless of the pretext they use to get your attention, they may take your money in any sort of number of ways. They may again do like the fake check scam and say, oh, for this job, you're required to go out and buy a printer or something from our supplier. They may say it's an investment opportunity or a business opportunity. Oh, you'll start your own business and you'll be using our proven business method, that sort of thing. And of course, you have to put your money in, but you'll never ever get anything out of it. But usually with these, the common thread is they're gonna require you to put in your own money upfront somehow, and then of course they'll disappear right after. I said several times, it's like a fake check scam. So they'll kind of hide the fact that you're using your own money, but really you are. Or maybe again, it's like some kind of multi-level marketing thing where you have to buy the product before you sell it. But with all of these, you can just kind of ask yourself, wait a minute, if they're gonna say they're gonna reimburse me for going out and buy this thing, why don't they just go and buy it themselves? And that's obviously because it's a scam. All right, up next, the next category of scams are coronavirus relief and stimulus scams. Basically, with the combination of the United States tax season coming up and talk of stimulus bills, there's a lot of opportunities for scammers to take advantage of people and trick them. One common tactic is scammers will contact you in any number of ways, whether it's email, text message, phone call, whatever, and they'll say, hey, you're now eligible, congratulations, to get your stimulus check of $2,000, whatever, and all you need to do to claim it is XYZ, and then they can steal your money or personal information in any number of ways after that. For example, they might say, hey, your coronavirus check is ready. We just need your bank information to deposit it, maybe your bank account number or your bank login. And then of course they'll go in and drain it if they can. Or they may contact you and say, hey, to even receive this coronavirus check, you're gonna have to sign up to even be eligible. You're not signed up yet. And then they give you a link to some website, of course, that is gonna either steal your information and use it to steal your identity, or they might, again, steal your bank login, stuff like that. If you're curious about whether or not you're eligible to get some kind of stimulus or when, it's always best to just stick to official news sources. I think there's plenty of news outlets out there that are official for your local news or national news that will tell you and describe who's eligible. If you have to sign up at all, I don't think you really have to. And you don't have to rely on these sketchy emails that come and you don't know who they're from. All right, now the final type of new scam we're gonna talk about are vaccine-related scams. I'm not talking about the vaccine itself being a scam, of course, but the FBI and state and local governments have said that scammers have been using the vaccine as an excuse to lure people in to scam them in any number of ways. And you may come in contact with these scammers in any number of ways. You might see an advertisement on social media. You might get a text message, again, an email, the ones we've talked about. And then if you click the link or respond to the ad, they'll probably, for example, either try to get you to put in a whole bunch of personal information, say, hey, to sign up to be put on the vaccine list, you have to give us all your information, your social security number, your bank info for payment, anything like that. Or they might say, oh, you need to put in your credit card number to pay the processing fee. Another example I've heard is they may try to say, hey, if you just pay us a fee, we'll get you to the front of the line. You can get the vaccine first. Again, that's a scam. There's no way to pay to get to the front of the line. Now again, your state or local government may actually have an official way to sign up to get the coronavirus vaccine. So always go though to your official state or local government's website and look for information on there about how to do that. Don't be signing up by clicking on links for social media or unsolicited emails you receive, but just be aware that it's a scam so you can kind of just double check if you get an email and double check that it did come from an official source. And again, you can always just go on the official website and don't click any links if you want to be sure. So hopefully now you're better prepared for these scams that I mentioned that are more prevalent now, or you might be able to recognize similar scams, say, hey, that sounds a lot like that other scam, might just be a variation of it, and you can be well more prepared going forward. If you guys want to keep watching, I'd recommend watching last year's video about new scams in 2020. Those scams have not stopped, they've not gone away, so you can even be more prepared by watching that. You can just click on that right there. So thanks so much for watching, guys, and I'll see you in the next video.
Okay, so there you go. There's some, you might hear the printer behind me because I don't think I'm going to have time for that second audio for about scams. So I'm just going to go over some more scams that the FTC has made us aware of in recent days. So if you hear the printer, it's printing one more scam that I think it's pretty important. So let's go over the love scam since it is Valentine's Day. You've heard of romance scams, but do you know how they happen? They start when scammers create fake profiles on dating apps or social media. Then those scammers strike up a relationship with their targets and work to build trust. Sometime later, they make up a story and ask for money. So how do you spot a romance scammer? Here are some things to watch for. Any love interest who asks you to give them money on a gift card, buy money transfer, or cryptocurrency is a scammer, period. Romance scammers profess love quickly. They might say they can't meet you because they're overseas for business or military service, but during the pandemic, they might just say they're locked down. Romance scammers might try to lure you off the dating site. Scammers will find a reason to ask you for money, maybe to buy a phone card to keep chatting, maybe to help with a medical emergency, or maybe something else. And romance scammers sometimes build interesting dating profiles, but try a reverse image search of the profile pictures. Are any photos associated with another name or with details that don't match up? That's just more proof that it's a scam. So, if you spotted any of these signs of a scam, tell the online dating app or social media platform right away, and then tell the FTC at reportfraudftc.gov. That's reportfraud.ftc.gov. All right, so there is your romance scam. Now, how about... there's an immigration relief scam, I guess, if you will, that the Federal Trade Commission is making us aware of. And that says, you might have seen that the president recently sent a new immigration bill to Congress. What does that mean for you if you're a non-citizen in the United States? Right now, the truthful answer is likely nothing, at least not yet. But scammers won't tell you that. Instead, we've already heard about scammers trying to profit off this news by offering so-called immigration services in response to this immigration bill. Someone might say that they can help you with a new pathway to citizenship, or that they can help you skip the line if you're a farm worker or a dreamer. In either case, for a fee. But none of this is true. First, there is no new immigration law yet at this point. It is just a proposal. Second, only notorious and dishonest attorneys will tell you they can help you get immigration status based on a bill. They are eager to charge you now for immigration help, even though they know the bill may never become law. This is what we know right now. This is, again, the FTC article. If anyone tells you that there's already a new path to citizenship because of the bill, it's a scam. You can get information on any changes to immigration law directly from U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services at uscis.gov. To get this news directly by email, subscribe to USCIS news releases and alerts. You can seek legal help from immigration lawyers or U.S. Department of Justice accredited representatives, not notarios. For tips on how to avoid scams against immigrants, go to ftc.gov/immigration. Never pay for USCIS forms. You can get free USCIS forms directly from their website or by calling them at 1-800-870-3676. And if you spot an immigration scam, report it to the Federal Trade Commission at reportfraud.ftc.gov. You can report the scam anonymously or ask your attorney to report the scam with their contact information instead. Each report helps protect your community against immigration scams. So just be aware that when people are saying there's a new law out there, you have to do your due diligence and research it and make sure. And if they're asking for a fee to help you get ahead of everybody else, it's probably too good to be true. All right? All right, so one more scam. And then we will go to Talking Cars with Consumer Report Magazine. Now, this scam has to do with the healthcare.gov. As it reopens, I guess there's more scams are coming out. So let's take a look at what the FTC has to say about this one. The coronavirus pandemic has not only had a dramatic health impact, but also an economic blow, as many Americans are now unemployed and uninsured. As a result, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services has reopened healthcare.gov for a special enrollment period from February 15, 2021 to May 15, 2021. Now, this special enrollment period will give people who need healthcare coverage the chance to sign up, but it also gives scammers a new chance to call, email, send letters, and texts trying to get your money and your personal and financial information. Scammers know you have questions about the special enrollment, and they're taking advantage of that to mislead you. Here are some things to know to help keep your money and personal information safe while getting the insurance coverage you need. No one from the government will call you about health insurance or ask you to verify your Social Security number or financial information. People who do that are scammers. People who offer legitimate help with the health insurance marketplace, sometimes called navigators or assisters, are not allowed to charge you for their help. If someone asks you for payment, it's a scam. People representing Affordable Care Act plans won't contact you by phone, email, or in person unless you are already enrolled. And if you're planning to sign up for insurance under the Affordable Care Act, do it at healthcare.gov. People who try to sign you up elsewhere just might be scamming you. All right, so for this instance, if you suspect a scam, let the FTC know at reportfraud.ftc.gov. Okay, so your reports give them the information they need to launch investigations and put scammers out of business, which is, you know, what we want to do. You work hard to earn your money, and you should keep your money, and the scammers should not be able to take it away from you, which is why we do this show. All right, so we are done with the scamming portion of the show. Let's move on to the Talking Cars portion, excuse me, with Consumer Report. They post a video every so often on YouTube called Talking Cars, and this episode talks about 2021 Hyundai Elantra first impressions, and also why a fender bender can be so expensive. So let's take a listen.
This week, we give our first impressions of the 2021 Hyundai Elantra, why so many new cars lack a traditional bumper, and should a driver in Florida buy a car that spent its life in Alaska? Next on Talking Cars. Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode. I'm Mike Monticello.
I'm Emily Thomas.
And I'm Ryan Pizlikowski.
So this week, we're going to just jump right into talking about cars. That's what we love doing. So we're going to start with what we're driving this week at the test track. And this week, we're going to be talking about the 2021 Hyundai Elantra. Now, this is an all-new version of this compact car. It's the seventh generation of the Elantra. And this is a car that competes against things like the Toyota Corolla, Honda Civic, Nissan Sentra, Mazda 3, Volkswagen Jetta, cars like that. This new car is a little bit longer, a little bit wider, a little bit lower than the outgoing car. And the base engine, which is the car, which is the engine that we have in our test car, is 147 horsepower, 2-liter, 4-cylinder, with a continuously variable transmission or CVT. The Elantra N line has a 201 horsepower, 1.6 liter turbo 4-cylinder, and there's also a hybrid model. So we bought a 2021 Elantra SEL. We added the convenience package. That brings, for $950, you actually get quite a lot of stuff. There's a larger instrument cluster for the driver, adaptive cruise control, leather-wrapped steering wheel and shifter, heated front seats, and a wireless cell phone charging pad. So total purchase price with the $995 destination charge, $23,000 even. So let's get into it. Ryan, let's start with you. Let's talk about the car's driving dynamics, you know, things like powertrain, handling, ride. What's, again, these are our first impressions. We're going to have a first drive up on this car. It's in our test program. What do you think of the car so far?
So my very first thoughts when I left the gate at the track and headed out on the roads was, is this a CVT? Or is this a regular transmission? Until I stepped on the throttle all the way to the floor for a brief moment, I didn't know what it was. A low RPM, normal driving, the average person, they would struggle to figure out if this was a CVT. This is a good thing. That's what I'm getting at. It behaves like a regular transmission. You know, you need to get on the throttle to merge onto the highway or, you know, jump into traffic at, you know, while at speed. It does flare a little bit, has some of that notorious CVT characteristic. But in general, it's really impressive. Around town, it's super smooth. It's responsive. It mimics shifts of a traditional transmission. I was impressed with that. Handling, you know, it's a smaller car, so naturally it's easy to place on the road. I think the steering was a little light. This car isn't sporty, in my opinion, but it's fun to drive around. It's easy to maneuver. I really don't have any issues there. Ride-wise, I think it's firm. It's not a Corolla, or it lacks the compliance of, say, like a Subaru Impreza. It's got a good firm edge to it. For $23,000, there's a lot of car here, and I think for it to be stiff in this category of cars is not like unheard of. Like, this is kind of typical, really. But there are some softer cars out there.
Right, totally agree. It feels like a more grown up version of the Elantra.
Yeah.
And I 100% agree with you with this continuously variable transmission. I think 9 out of 10 people, if they get in and drive this car, if they didn't know it had a CVT, they wouldn't know it had a CVT. You know, when we talk about, you talk about the downsides to CVTs. Well, the upside is they usually get really good fuel economy.
Downside, there's a reason they're doing that.
Right. The downside is the drivability. You know, they're kind of known for this rubber banding. You know, that's when you get on the throttle even mildly hard and it's like, that's my CVT impersonation.
And that's literally how he teaches me about CVTs, sound effects and all.
But this one mimics shifts. So you're driving it and it, you know, as you accelerate, it keeps bringing the revs down just as a traditional automatic would. And as far as CVTs goes, it's one of the best tuned ones I think we've driven. And so,
yeah. And what we found, I, you know, back to the CVT for a second, what we found over the years is typically a CVT that's mated to a more powerful engine, the V6 or something, takes away some of that sling rubber banding,
right,
like you just said. This car has enough power, but it's not a muscle car by any means, and it still does well, and I think that's commendable.
I think that's your point. Yeah, it's still able to be refined without having the power to kind of mask the downsides to the CVT.
Right.
And I also agree, you know, as far as it is a little on the firm side as far as the ride, but it's, you know, it's a little behind, you know, the top cars in the class maybe, but I think most people will think it's totally livable. Before we go on, just want to make sure, Doc Ems, do you agree with, I don't want to say it's totally livable and you're like, man, this is the harshest riding car ever. Did you think it rode okay or?
No, I enjoyed it. I didn't, I took it around the track and I took it through our rec road, which has considerable bumps and twists and turns. And, you know, I didn't feel like, oh my gosh, I'm getting like jarred out of my head over here. I actually really liked driving it for like the little while that I had it. I thought it was enjoyable. I thought it handled nicely. The interior is pretty nice, you know, at least like up front, the dash area, whatever. They try to make it look really sleek with like the big screens.
It's got what we call showroom appeal. You know, you get in, especially because we have the larger instrument cluster. It almost looks like one giant horizontal screen between the instrument cluster and the touch infotainment touchscreen. And then they also angled the center stack toward the driver, and they sort of have the center console has a little bit of a like sort of panel in between, you know, separating the driver from the passenger. It kind of makes it feel a little sporty, don't you think?
Yeah, it has appeal for sure in terms of like aesthetics, and it feels nice, you know, like for an Elantra, right? It's just this like kind of normal sedan. It's not like it's an out of this world kind of car or whatever, but it still feels pretty nice inside. But then when you are rattling off all the things about the convenience package, one of the things that I noticed, and even when I was in the car, I noticed because, you know, I'm a shorter driver. I'm average at best at my height, but I have to adjust the seats. And there's no power adjustment for the convenience package, which seems really odd when I do have heated seats in the convenience package.
Right. So it's a bit inconvenient.
It's not as convenient as it maybe implies, right?
Yes. I'm like, that seemed like, you know, kind of one of the key areas to add for convenience.
Right.
So that was definitely kind of a little annoying. I was like, okay. But I do like these other sort of like, they might be small little features to other people, but, you know, to me, they kind of make a big deal because they're just practical, in my opinion. Like on the front passenger side, Hyundai puts this little like pocket next to the center console that you can like throw your phone into. You know, it's like just big enough to like stash a phone, stash a wallet or something.
It's a thoughtful touch. Someone put some thought into that.
Right. Things like that. The little armrest thing that you were talking about that kind of separates the driver's side from the front passenger side. I sat over there and at first I was like, oh, this is kind of nice. I can like sort of grip this like it's an armrest handle. But then it also felt like a little constricting. Like it was like being told I had to stay in my front passenger space. Like I couldn't like spread out quite. But, you know, things like that are just I had to go check the trunk for something when I was doing my evaluation and there was an actual trunk release button. So I don't know. Yes. Like small things. It's the small things that make me really happy about these cars.
No, that makes sense.
Do you guys remember the Sonata that we had for like a little while? Okay.
Yeah.
So that Sonata had like this hidden button in the middle of the Hyundai logo that I could not find. Like, I thought the car had no external trunk release, and I was going out of my mind trying to evaluate this car. I was so annoyed that every time I had to go pop the trunk from the front. And then finally, Gabe was like, no, there's a hidden button. And I'm like, of course, Gabe would know there's a hidden button. So this time, I was, like, doing, like, a little victory dance because there was an actual button that I could see with my own eyes.
Right. What about, like, the controls in the infotainment system? Did you have any issues with that, or it's pretty straightforward?
They're pretty straightforward, right? I did think that it was a little bit odd, unless I did it completely wrong, was I had to go through more steps to like hook up my CarPlay. So usually they're just sort of like plug and play and, you know, the Hyundai infotainment system like automatically just projects your screen. But this time I had to go through more of my settings to like enable Bluetooth or Wi-Fi or whatever it was. And so it wasn't as like seamless as I'm accustomed to. I really am accustomed to just like when I have to rent a car, I typically choose a Hyundai because I can just plug and play and it's totally easy to do. So that was a little bit more cumbersome than usual. But in general, I do tend to love the Hyundai controls because they are really simple. Like there's knobs where there should be knobs. Everything is where I think it should be. My turn, my stocks, you know, they do the things that they should. They're not trying to do things that make no sense to me or completely, unintuitive.
Right.
Which maybe it's just like my generation of driver where it's like, I expect that this stock on the left should do this thing and this stock on the right should do this thing and not suddenly be my gear shift or whatever it is, you know?
So for me, I found like that the headroom was pretty decent, even though it's a small car. The center console, you know, we go on about center consoles a lot and how do they hem in your right knee or do they not? And this one hems in my right knee a little bit, but it's a little lower than some center consoles. So it's more the bottom part of my knee, not the side of my knee.
What did you think about the slope on the door?
The door?
On the driver's side door? Yeah, like the armrest, how all the, like, it slopes down, right? And so, like, all of your controls for, like, windows and locking and stuff, they're kind of, like, down.
Oh, that didn't bother me. That didn't bother me. Did it actually bother you, or did you, like...
No, I didn't mind it as much as I thought I would. I think in other cars, even though they were, like, I've been in others where they had the slope, but the buttons were, like, way at the far end of it, so... It was kind of still like I had to pay a lot of attention to where I was putting my hand to be able to find what I needed.
Right.
But this one wasn't that bad. I was just curious what you guys thought about that.
Yeah. And Ryan, you're a bigger guy. So I fit in the front seat. Okay. How about you? I know you've got those long legs.
I felt a little high. I couldn't get quite low enough. I'm longer in the torso, I think, so, for seating position wise. So I find myself trying to lower the seat in most cars. So it wasn't bad. There's enough room for me. One thing that did drive me nuts is the rear trunk lid. The rear deck above the rear seat. Like, it's really hot.
Yeah.
Like
the rear visibility is not like...
It's not that great.
No. Right.
Yeah, the other thing is that if you're... the car's pretty low. And if you're maybe getting on in years or not that flexible, this may not be a great car for you because it does take a little effort getting in and out, especially out of the rear seat. But even out of the front seat, it's a little difficult.
That rear seat cushion is like flat and low. Like the car's already low and then the cushion itself is pretty low too. So you don't really get it might be kind of an awkward angle back there.
Right. The cars, if you look at the car closely, you can see that it's got a lot of angles and creases on the outside. You know, they really tried hard with the styling. I don't think they show up that well though with our test car's gray paint. I think kind of hides that as well as the black wheels. You know, I actually like black wheels. I don't think it works in this particular car. Do you guys like the styling? Do you even notice the styling, or is that gray paint kind of hiding all the creases and curves?
Yeah, I think you're right. It's a kind of mundane being, you know, that then with the black, that color with the black wheels, it's you know, if it was like a blue or something, it would be it's still a sharper color, but we obviously don't rate that, so
right. we always like to talk about advanced driver assistance features, and this one has a lot of standard features: forward collision warning, automatic emergency braking with pedestrian detection, blind spot warning, rear cross traffic warning, lane departure warning, and lane keeping assistance. So we're happy about that. Just want to remind, this is our initial impressions. We have a first drive on the website that you can check out, and the car will be going through our test program. So we'll have full road test results soon. And you can find all those, of course, on consumerreports.org. Before we move on to our next segment, just want to take a brief moment to talk about a potential giving moment for you folks out there. We want to talk about the Talking Cars donation program. If you're not aware, Consumer Reports is a nonprofit organization. The work we do is funded by memberships as well as donations. So if you're able to give some money, it would really help us out. It would help us to keep doing all the things we do, including this show. So you can find out more about this program at cr.org/givetalkingcars. And now back to the show. So we're going to move on to audience questions. Don't forget to send those questions, comments, 30-second video clips to talkingcars@icloud.com. And speaking of video questions, we're going to start off with one from Nelson, who has a question about bumpers. So let's take a look at this.
Hey, CR. Are bumpers still under the 2.5 mile per hour standard, where it was reduced from the Reagan administration's 5 mile per hour standard that it was previously? And I know that those standards apply to cars. I mean, SUVs and trucks make so much more of the market now. Shouldn't those be covered as well by now? And the standard before, I know that, you know, the damage, there wasn't supposed to be damage at that low speed. But now, is damage allowed to the bumpers at that speed now, 2.5 miles per hour? So it won't protect sensors or the lights that are in those bumpers now if they get hit at 2 miles per hour? And there's no bumpers on these Mazdas or Genesis. So how do those get protected? I mean, you just see a grill, it's just going to get damaged. Those back in the 80s that Consumer Reports had tested bumpers to see if they met requirements. And I don't see Consumer Reports testing these bumpers at all anymore. So just wanted your thoughts on that. Thank you.
All right, Ryan, let's start with you. What can you tell us about current bumper standards, as well as we used to have do some bumper testing at CR, right? What happened to that program?
So we used to have a bumper basher at the track, and we would do a 5 mile per hour on-center collision and then offset at 5 miles per hour. And then we would do 3 miles per hour into the corners. We don't do this any longer. We let the government do this testing. They're just better equipped to do it than we are. And so now, you know, back in the day, cars used to have the bumper was external. You could see this thing hanging out off the car. It did its job. It was easier to fix because it was you just could replace that bumper. Nowadays, obviously, with the quest for fuel economy and styling and safety, the bumper is now just this big plastic thing, right? Then behind that, there'll be a layer of some sort of foam. And then behind that is an actual bumper. The bumper's job is to protect the car from getting really damaged beyond that point. Now you have this car with this beautiful big grill on it, and then all these little sensors everywhere. And you hit it at 2.5 miles per hour and you crack the plastic and right. Maybe move a sensor or crack the foam but underneath it. You know, nowadays, a good bumper, you hit a bumper pretty good, it's an insurance claim, probably. I mean, it's not, you're no longer paying out of pocket for this quick little right. thing, because there's a lot that goes into it, and you have to get stuff aligned, and it turns into a whole rigmarole.
Right. All right, so fender benders are getting expensive. Anyway, let's move on to, but at least the cars are still safe. That's the important thing. Let's move on to another question. This one comes from Chris from Salt Lake City, Utah. Chris says, I just read a recent report published by the U.S. House of Representatives regarding child booster seat safety. It asserts that companies advertising 30-pound minimum weights and self-reporting side impact test results are not reliable. I know that CR conducts robust independent front impact testing for car seats, but are side impact tests being considered? Also, are you planning to update your published minimum weights for booster seats in your online ratings? Doc Ems, you are our child seat point person here at CR. So first, can you tell us a little bit about the report and what is CR doing now? Oh, and there's Micah. Hi, Micah.
Hey, buddy.
Just in time to talk about car seats. Yeah, so the report, I just want to kind of clarify what was said in the report. So it highlighted the fact that many car seat manufacturers are maintaining a 30-pound minimum for booster seats, which is pretty low. In Canada, for instance, the minimum weight is 40 pounds, and that's regulated by their transportation, you know, aspect of the government. And here in the US, NHTSA says that the minimum can be 30 pounds, which people have been really trying to push that up to at least 40 pounds. So one, even though we know that there's data that says that, you know, 30 pounds is really low, really kids at 30 pounds should not be in booster seats. That's currently what the standard is. And car seat manufacturers can obviously make it higher than that minimum, but they've chosen not to. So it was kind of highlighting which ones have chosen not to do this. And then it was talking about these side impact protection claims that manufacturers make. And the reason that those are unreliable, as Chris from Salt Lake City has said, is because there is no regulatory side impact standard for car seats. So manufacturers have essentially developed their own tests in-house, which are all proprietary, and they are saying that, okay, our seat meets or exceeds our side impact testing, but we have nothing to compare it to. Because there is no regulatory standard, there's nothing for us to say, like, okay, the test that you're running has a comparable result that we can, you know, say, like, you know, it's just isolated by itself, right? It's almost like there's no peer review for it.
Right.
And so we can't really just go by what the manufacturer says for that, because we can't compare it to a standard, for one, right? There's no minimum standard of safety that they have to meet for side impact testing. And then two, since the tests are proprietary and the results are too, we don't actually know what that means, right? We don't know what that safety looks like. So CR did some coverage around this story, and it kind of really is giving parents advice about when is the right time to move your child into a booster seat or move them out of one. And really the biggest piece of advice that we can give you is for any transition that you're making, whether it's going from rear facing to forward facing or going from a harness, you know, a forward facing harness to a booster seat, don't go by the minimums for the next stage. Right. You want to make sure that you're keeping your child in their current seat, current orientation, current installation type, you know, whether it's harness, up to the maximum height or weight limits for that seat. Then make the transition. Don't be in a rush to make those transitions, because every time you do, it's a slight downgrade in safety, you know. So you really want to maximize the amount of safety that your child is getting and the protection that they're getting in the stage that they're in, rather than just kind of jumping ahead. And that's kind of one way to get around those things. Chris is asking about what we're doing. So Consumer Reports does have our own car seat crash test for frontal impacts only. We are currently working to develop a side impact test. NHTSA, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, they proposed a side impact test for car seats. It hasn't gone to final rule yet. Most likely our CR's test will have many similarities with the NHTSA test, because we've been following along with their research and development, and kind of we're in step with the changes that they've been making to make it more representative of a real world crash and real world vehicle geometries. But there will probably be also some key differences in what our test looks like versus the regulatory test, which is important, which is what you want. The regulatory test, remember, is providing you with that minimum standard of safety. And then consumer information programs like ours is trying to help you delineate, now that all the seats have passed the minimum standard, what highlights the differences? What are these additional margins of safety that these seats can provide to help you make a better informed choice as you, you know, purchase seats for your kids? One of the things that the report talked about also is some manufacturers have decided that they're going to change the minimum weights on their booster seats. So they've said that, you know, they maybe changed it on their website, or they've said that they're going to do this. So would we also update our ratings for that? In general, we only update our ratings if we can purchase a sample at retail that shows the changes that they are seeing. So we don't ever just take the manufacturer's word for it, right? We want to be able to prove that you as a consumer are going to actually be benefiting from this change that they are asserting. So in order for us to update our ratings, we would have to purchase samples, we would have to verify it for ourselves, and then only you would see those changes reflected in our model pages. But thank you, Chris, because I love car seat questions.
I think bottom line, for all things child seat related, go to consumerreports.org. You're going to see lots of great information up there. Let's move on to another question. This one comes from Brett from Long Island, New York. And Brett says, how much softer of a ride do smaller wheeled cars have versus those with larger diameter wheels with less tire sidewall? It seems to me it makes a big difference in the softness of the ride, but is that real or just in my head? Ryan, tire tester extraordinaire, is Brett going crazy, or is this really true?
So we don't measure this objectively, but subjectively we have seen, a tire and wheel package with more sidewall on the tire ride a little better than, say, a low profile tire, meaning there's less sidewall. So you could, if you had the same one car, we have a Toyota Camry right now. We have a 65 series sidewall tire. It has more sidewall, and then we have a 45 series sidewall, which is less sidewall. Same overall diameter, same style wheels, but obviously one's a 16-inch wheel, one's an 18-inch wheel.
Okay.
On that same car, the lower profile tire, the 45 series, rides stiffer than the 65 series sidewall, right? Okay, that's just a generic thing. There are cars out there that are designed to have a big wheel on it. So that when their engineers are designing this car, they design the suspension a little to accommodate some of that stuff. And then it depends on the type of car. If it's a real sports car, it's going to be stiffer just because that's advantageous for crisp handling right. and all that stuff. So, you know, a good example is our Porsche Taycan that we have. That has huge wheels on it. I mean, I don't even know what size. They're like 20-inch wheels. That car rides quite well, but it was designed that way. You know, it's a heavier car. It was designed that way. But yeah, in general, I mean, it's almost common sense in a sense. It's more rubber, cushions more. And it's a little less work. The suspension has to do it.
So. Right.
But they could tune the car, right?
Like, yeah, they can totally work with the suspension to make it work better with the bigger wheels. But if just on a case-to-case basis, yeah, you go bigger wheel, less sidewall, it's probably going to ride stiffer. So, all right, let's move on to the last question. This one comes from Jake. Jake says, I'm in the market for a lightly used SUV, and I'm looking at a 2016 Toyota RAV4 Hybrid Limited. But the car started its life in Alaska and was driven down to Florida in 2020. It has only 20,000 miles, but it spent more than half of its life in freezing weather. Are there any potential problems I should be aware of? Well, so the first thing I did was I reached out to CR's chief mechanic, John Ibbotson, and he said Toyota tests their vehicles down to minus 20 degrees Fahrenheit and back up to 120 degrees Fahrenheit. So he says, I mean, his point being that they do rigorous testing in these really cold weather situations to test everything about the car, both the way the car drives, but also all the interior materials. Do they withstand really cold temps like that? And he said, if the vehicle shows no signs of problems after spending any time in Florida, I would not be concerned. I also want to say that CR, we do recommend that if you're serious about a used car, you really should have it taken to a mechanic that you trust. And in this case, I would say ask that mechanic to not just do the usual going through, but also put it up on a lift and check out the underside of that car. Ryan, I know you know a lot about snow and salt and everything. I couldn't get a definitive answer as to whether Alaska uses salt or not. So some things I saw online seemed like they said they do. Some areas of Alaska seems like they took a lot of pride that they don't. So I'm not sure, but I mean, Ryan, if there was salt involved, now that's a different story, right? As far as corrosion.
Yeah, I mean, that would be, I think that's the first thing I would think about is a vehicle coming from a northern area where there is snow and ice. You know, I know in New England, we use salt and calcium chloride and whatever other chemical, like it's going out of style and it's just melting cars around us. You know, rust-wise, it's unfortunate, but it keeps the road safer. It's a good thing, but you know, I found the same thing, Mikey. I couldn't find out exactly what areas do, what don't. And I think it is situational. I would definitely, that would be my first thing to check out the bottom of that car, make sure there's not a ton of corrosion. If that is an issue or a concern, I mean, he's down in Florida. Maybe look for another car down there. I mean, now you have a car. I sound like a jerk saying that.
No, but Ryan, you never sound like
you're
a
in
jerk.
Florida. Ideally, a car from Florida. I mean, we dream of picking up a southern car or truck because it doesn't have any rust or corrosion like we have up here. So people are always bringing those up north. Try to find something down there, maybe. That's just a thought.
But it's entirely possible that it's just a smoking deal and he doesn't.
Yeah, and it could be flawless.
Right.
It could be flawless underneath. Even in a salt environment, some people
if wash you wash the undercarriage on a regular basis, it probably would be okay. But check that undercarriage, and if that's good, then Big John gave it the okay. So we never go against Big John. Anyway, that's going to do it for this episode. Don't forget to click on the links in the show notes if you want to learn more about the vehicle and the topics we talked about. Don't forget to send those questions, comments, 30-second video clips to talkingcars@icloud.com. Thank you so much for spending time with us today, and we'll see y'all next week.
All right. So I just wanted to mention, too, that Car and Driver also did a review on the 2021 Hyundai Elantra, which they say starts at $20,655, and they have rated it 8.5 out of 10. So Car and Driver really like this car, and you can get this information at carandriver.com under 2021 Hyundai Elantra review. And one of the things they say is the highs of this car is bold exterior styling, compelling value, and perky turbocharged N-line model. The lows would be sluggish acceleration with non-turbo engine. Best infotainment features aren't standard, and a few cliched design flourishes. And their verdict is, wild styling aside, the latest Elantra sedan wows with its features, performance, and value. So they are really loving this 2021 Elantra sedan. Okay, and anything else that they have to say? They all have what's new for the 2021 Hyundai, the overview. So if you're all interested in what car and driver has to say about it, in addition to the Consumer Report magazine review of what they had to say about it, they have all kinds of information, engine, transmission, and performance. And they also mentioned that continuously variable automatic transmission, the CVT. They do say the front-wheel drive is the only option here, as is a continuously variable automatic transmission, CVT. Fuel economy and real-world MPG. EPA estimates the 2021 Elantra with the 2.0-liter four-cylinder will earn up to 33 MPG in the city and 43 MPG on the highway. So I hope that helps your questions about the 2021 Hyundai Elantra. But we are nearing the end of our show. So if you have any questions or comments on anything you've heard on the show, any of the scams that we mentioned on the show, or anything about the car talk that you heard from Consumer Report magazine, you can email me at consumerreviewreport@gmail.com. I'm also on Facebook at Consumer Review Report. And I'm on Twitter at CRR in McKeesport. Also, if you have any ideas of any products or services you would like to hear on the show, you can also email me at consumerreviewreport@gmail.com. I'm on Facebook at Consumer Review Report and on Twitter at CRR in McKeesport. So, this is the Consumer Review Report on Tube City Online, WMCK.FM, Internet Radio, a service of Tube City Online, Tube City Community Media, Inc. This program is heard Sunday at 4 p.m. and Thursday at 9 a.m. Podcasts of these shows are available on WMCK.FM/CRR, iTunes, Google, iHeart, Spotify, and Spreaker. So if you miss our regularly scheduled show, you can catch the podcast on those programs. So, or on those apps, I should say. So, I'm Diane Rebecca, wishing everyone a safe and good week.